You are listening to the For Liberals Tech Podcast, episode 273. San Francisco has a message for Uber.
Second to last episode of season 6, episode 273 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December 18th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and stealing engineering plans for a weapon of mass destruction is my brother James Furlough.
You know what? It's been a while, but I actually saw this one. I saw the latest Star Wars, A Rogue Story.
Yes!
What is it? I don't remember.
Something like
Anyways.
That.
Whatever. Saw it. Loved it. It's awesome. Go see it if you haven't. I don't want to spoil a thing other than it takes place after the third movie and before the third episode and before the fourth episode. It's kind of in there.
Hashtag Rogue One is a prequel.
Yes. Yes. I thought it was good. Good acting, good graphics, good storyline, good atmosphere in the theater. I saw 2D. I didn't go 3D.
Oh, you missed out.
I know.
So I gotta ask, because you saw, how big was your screen?
Big enough? I don't know.
Was it like pretty normal movie going experience? Okay.
Yeah. You know, like an AMC screen, whatever.
All right, cool. So then this is my question. There were a couple of graphics. How good did that come off? Because I have come to realize that sometimes those sorts of things look worse on the big screen when they're like high frame rates, high resolution. They actually look better on your TV.
I would say the first one, I was okay with it. It wasn't a distraction. I would say the second one would have been better to not do it.
You know, it's so funny, and I hear you, but I've heard it go back and forth on people that are like, which one bothered them more? To me, the first one I thought was like the second one. I was just like, I was totally fine with. Didn't weird me out at all. But I've heard people that are like, yeah, straight into the uncanny valley, just really threw them off. Whereas the first one, I was like, oh, okay, all right, I'm looking at a cartoon here, but I like it. I mean, you know, it's fine. But it was just really, you know, I don't know. That's interesting. And I know I've talked to a number of
different
people.
I guess for me, it's like, again, with the first one, like there's no way around it. You had to do it, and I thought it was okay. The second one, I was like, you didn't have to. You could have gone a real subtle way. You could have avoided that. I forget what you initially called it. That
uncanny valley.
That graphic.
No, I'm sorry. Oh yeah.
that special effect.
Yeah.
You didn't have to have it, and it would have avoided the issue altogether, and it would have been just as powerful, like Jaws. You know, just let it be there. Don't show it. Let us all just imagine it in our heads because we were.
Yeah.
And it
literally would have been though they actually filmed it right. They just had to cut the last.
Yes,
the last 3 seconds, and it would have been like, "Cool, all right, I'm happy with this. This is fine."
Yeah, but overall, I was super pumped. I liked it. I if I had free time, I'd probably go watch it again, type of thing.
How about that? How about that? Oh man, it is such a bummer. We can't spoil anything.
It's good. Highly recommend it. It's good. Go watch it.
Right.
Star Wars, it's a Rogue Story.
We should have talked about it before the show. Why didn't we talk about it in the pre-show?
I know. We got our system.
That's all right. So other things going on. So we got the, this is Christmas is next week, right?
Yeah, next Sunday.
Next Sunday. Are we doing a,
I don't know.
Doing a show?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing a show.
I feel like we got to figure it out. And it doesn't matter when, because I feel like this should be our year in review show, so we can do I think we should do our post-diction
show. Yeah, because the next
one's
the second. Yeah,
and then do the prediction show next week.
Mm.
And that's kind of what I'm thinking.
That's happening fast. Okay.
I know. 2017's here, man.
Dude, I was writing some dates today, and I did around 2017. And I was like, what? Already? Come on, James. Like, Just give it a rest. You're so overzealous.
I'm already like planning out January because, you know, it's nearly here.
You're still planning January?
Wow. Right. I know. I've got that much flexibility is astounding.
It's the last minute.
But I know. And I'm like, and I keep telling everybody, like, so what do you want to do next year? I like it. I like that dumb joke. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up was last night I think I've stumbled upon something that works pretty well for a Christmas party. Because everybody has a Christmas party.
Well, yeah, you had your eggnog thingy.
This is our third annual eggnog party. It's awesome. It's so much fun.
That's now a thing.
It's now a thing. Yeah. And I might have went a little heavy on the brandy. The general consensus is that I must have accidentally added an extra cup of brandy into it.
Whoa.
Because I didn't mean to, but it was stronger this year than it was last year. And like wow. Everybody was like, whoa, do not need much. But turned out really well. It still tastes really good.
It's How many people show up to this little festive of festivals?
We've been somewhere between 10 and 20 every year.
That's awesome.
And it's a different group every year, which is pretty neat and kind of fun and
so you guys like Snapchatting photos the entire time or posting them some sort of group thingy to share them, or are you printing off little snaps using a sprocket, or like how do you guys actually interact, or do you just talk to each other like Luddites and cavemen?
Well, I've got my VR rig set up in my room, so we did some of that. Mostly just talking to each other. In retrospect, I did a really bad job of, yeah, I know. I didn't post any of my, I got two neat pictures of the eggnog. And this is the trick. We call it the eggnog tasting party, but I also make chicken and dumplings. And I like,
oh, seriously?
And I start the stock at like 8 a.m. And so it's like, it's primo, and
chicken's just falling off the bones.
Oh yeah, it's completely dissolved. It's crazy, and
that's fun.
Yeah,
dude, Christmas things delicious. Are fun.
I know, it's good times. It's a good thing that calories don't count this time of year,
dude. No doubt.
Jeez, Louise, I don't even.
I had a double helping of eggnog myself. I just get the carton from Winco. I like to. Some people think eggnog's a little strong, so they like to cut it. 50-50 with something else. I do too, but I use chocolate milk to cut it.
Oh my gosh. So, exactly. You know, it's funny. That did actually cross my mind while I was looking at it. Like I had like the last cup today, and I was just sitting there thinking, I wonder if you could add chocolate to this. I wonder if that would do anything.
Dude, and I like it. Everyone else thinks it's the grossest thing ever.
Yeah. I'll think about it. I'm getting, I don't want to get too creative.
One I do a little whipped cream to top it off, too, so I'm...
That's... Jeez Louise. But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about eggnog, although if we did an eggnog show once a year, I think I'd be okay with that. But this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, and by that we mean the soap opera of corporations dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yeah, I founded and work for HPI. However, I do not represent HPI or any of their opinions. And this next week is going to be awesome because, let's see, 2/3 of my team are taking the week off. And so it's literally like me and one other guy and then my boss, which like that's probably the one. You're like, everyone else could be here and the boss could be off and it would probably be infinitely better. but it's all right. It's all good. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club. Still
nice.
Hanging on for the long run with Twitter, which is too small to attend important meetings, but
growing. Are you sure that that's the issue? I can't figure out
how to make emojis or something.
I know. It's funny. I actually kind of want
controversy for controversy's sake, in my opinion.
You know, honestly, most of these are controversies for controversy's sake. But that one's just such good drama. Like, I really want to know.
I know. Well, it's like factually, Yes, they were way too small to show up to the meeting. Like, that's right. True.
For people
next,
that are...
The next... Oh, yeah. So the Trump administration decided to meet with all the tech elite. Yeah. And just kind of be like, hey, guys. So what's going on? How can we help you? And whatever it was. And clearly, I didn't pay that close attention to the actual meeting itself. Because the controversy around it was Twitter wasn't invited. And everyone was like, what? No Twitter? Because obviously, Trump is... big on Twitter. He uses it a lot. That's like
kind his of a big deal on Twitter.
Form of communication. They're like, you would think he'd throw them a bone and be like, you should come on over. Well, there's now conflicting stories as to why they were not invited. The official boring response from the Trump administration is that Twitter was too small. They're not big enough player to sit at the big kids' table, which is true because the smallest company that was invited is twice as big as Twitter.
Yeah.
So, well,
and the other dilemma you get into is it's not just, I mean, like, you could single out Twitter because you like their platform, but, you know, who are you ignoring that's at that,
right,
all the way in between, you know?
Yeah, that was like standing room only in that meeting. And so, yeah, someone's going to get bumped. And I don't know. But, oh God, that's boring. The real possible reason is that the Trump administration tried to work with Twitter to create an Crooked Hillary emoji. So anytime someone did the hashtag Crooked Hillary, it would replace it or add an emoji, which I really wish they had art around this one.
I know.
But, which kind of leads you to go, hey, is that real? But anyways, apparently, like, they were all going forward with it. It was happening. And then the 11th hour, Jack Dorsey was like, guys, this is really not good. We should not do it. Officially, we can't figure out a way to let people know that this emoji was sponsored. And since that would be confusing and misleading, we're not going to allow it. And so... So they get it. And so the prevailing theory is that Trump has thin skin, which is not a stretch. And it was his way of getting back at Twitter by not inviting them, even though he still uses their platform regularly. And
I guess
not big, but whatever.
Yeah.
I own them, so I'm going to defend Twitter. Yeah, that was unfair. They should have been there.
I know.
No, come on, Etsy wasn't there. Lending Club wasn't there. Come on, man. Just hating on James. That's what this really is about.
Exactly.
Dead against me and the Furlough Bros.
What a jerk. That's funny.
Seriously. Anyways, that's my disclosure.
So if you want to follow us throughout the week, when I'm not being an idiot, I post pictures. I will post pictures to Instagram.
Latergram. That's what that's called.
What is it?
A later gram.
I know. I just heard that term today. It's family stuff, so I'll have to tell you the context for that later. But
listeners, you know as much as I do at this point.
But if you want to follow me on Twitter also, it's at Matthew D. Furlough. That's where I'm getting at.
I'm jamesfurlough.com, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. I don't really use Snapchat, but I'm there, so, you know, whatever.
Awesome. If you want to get more information about the show,
how do you say this?
I don't know.
I'm on Mario Run, I guess?
Oh, yeah.
Can you look up usernames? Is that a thing? I feel like they make it needlessly complicated to connect with people.
Always have. Like,
share this really long 16-digit code to get your friends.
That's their like modus operandi over at Nintendo.
Yeah, and I was like, huh. I mean, there's a search feature there. I could not find any of the people who I know are on it, so who knows if that actually works, but there's that. But anyways, look me up, James Furlough, on Mario Run. Maybe I have a bunch of friends.
Mm-hmm. It'd be fun.
I don't know if it works or not.
It'd be fun run. So did you pay the full $9.99?
Oh, dude, happily, yes.
Nice.
I'm happy to support a company like that. And the game is genuinely fun.
It is. I agree.
Did you? Did you pony up the...
Not yet.
Whatever that type of bill is?
Not yet. I probably will. But...
It's good. I like that there's multiple ways to play it. You know, where you could just run through it and beat the game, if you will. Rescue the princess. Or you can try to collect all the different types of coins. There's three different levels of coins So there's in each level, there's five special colored coins. It starts off with pink and then purple and then green. And you have to collect all five in a single run. So that's part of the trick. And once you collect all the pinks, then you get to collect all the purples, then all the greens.
Whoa.
And you literally play the course differently depending on what type of coin you're trying to collect. And so it just makes it a different game. It would be nice to be able to choose which one I'm going for. I can't. The greens, ridiculously hard to try to capture.
It sounds right.
But yeah. So I think I've, like, on the very first level, I think I actually have received one coin. Like, I actually was able to get to it. And I think I only know where two are at.
Oh, jeez.
So
the green coins? That's funny.
Yeah, so like for the pink ones, you're like, oh yeah, there it is. And if you know what you're doing, you can get it in five or six runs, maybe at the top. I've had a few where you get them all the first run. You're like, all right, cool. I find for the purple ones, like, I gotta work it. That's a good I gotta invest 10 to 20 runs in it too. And then it's like the last one. And then when I finally get it, like, I had one where it was a middle one, and I got it once, and it was almost like an accident. I was like, oh, okay, don't die, because I don't think I could do this again.
Keep it together, James. Yeah,
that's just classic. But anyways, pretty fun game. Look me up there.
Wow, that sounds good.
We're in trouble if this is how I'm going with just the intro.
I like it. Hey, so do we want to do? We did a contest this week. We got a bunch of entrants.
Yeah,
and we picked a winner. Do we want to announce it now, or do we want to wait till the end of the show?
Well, we can announce it now.
No, wait, but then they have to listen to the entire show.
Or I trust them.
Or skip to the end.
I trust our listeners.
All right.
Yeah, we did a competition. We gave away a Google Home. It was awesome. We had 300 people enter the competition. So thank you, everybody, for liking and sharing and doing all of that fun stuff. And so
and we hope to be doing more of these. We like the response, and
yeah, it was pretty fun.
It's been a fun process, so we're hoping to do more. So definitely stay tuned so you can do more of this.
Yes.
Eloquent.
And yeah, so we're super excited to have that. And yeah, we chose a winner. His name is John. That's all I know.
All right,
so
John.
We put it all into a random generator, and it randomly stuck out a number, and we made sure that everyone had the proper number of entries in it and double-checked the math a couple different ways. And so it was genuinely random, and I actually created the random generator and then kept randomly generating the random generator until Matthew randomly told me to stop running the random generator, and then I randomly came up with a number.
Which that last one is where you really get into truly random, because there's all sorts of quantum weirdness that comes into my decision of when I say, yeah, that's pretty good now. You can stop.
yeah. So, and I didn't force it, at least not knowingly, the decision.
Yeah, double blind.
So, so it was cool. It was a lot of fun. We appreciate it. So congrats to John. You'll hopefully have it by Christmas if you get back to me soon enough.
Yeah.
In the mail for you. But super fun. Yeah, so we'll keep it going. And I guess if you guys have a product that you're like, dude, you should really do a review and give this thing away, like, let us know. We're willing to do that, I think.
Yeah.
We haven't talked much about it. But yeah, we're willing to do it. I'm committing us to it.
I'm down, I think.
Yeah.
So speaking of products that speak to us.
That are in our homes.
Yeah. So Amazon Echo, which is the slow stepbrother of the Google Home.
Slow stepbrother?
No. It's the feature-rich version of Google Home.
There we go.
It's funny talking to different people about their different competitive qualities and what's capable of doing what. But so Amazon.
Did you see that Google Home actually? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you off.
No, talk to me.
But did you see that Google Home got like 20 new skills this week?
They're opening up the API to be able to do different stuff. And I'm not in love with how they're doing it, because like part of their whole thing is they're literally opening it up.
It's like Apple Store-esque, like get permission.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like,
they went to the other extreme of Android.
Yeah, right. Well, not to mention the fact that it's I think what I want is what I'd really like is for Google Home to be like, I can just be like, hey, Google Home, order me a pizza or get me a pizza. And it will communicate with Roundtable's back end to get me a pizza delivered, right? But it sounds like how they're...
Well, Domino's, not Roundtable, but Domino's is one of those new people.
Yeah, but it sounds like the whole deal is that it's like, you don't actually use the Google Home audio infrastructure. Pipe into the other people's bot. I'm not exactly sure how it happens. I should really look into this more clearly. But it's like, but they're offloading a lot of the back end responsibilities to the other companies. And I don't think that that's Google. Google didn't portray it as that's how they wanted to let this grow and develop. And I wonder if they're just running into difficulties with their expanding their AI quick enough so that it can handle more and more diverse tasks.
Yeah, and I gotta imagine that. I mean, it's just they're getting so much pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
Obvious flaw. They're like, let's just get something out there before the end of the year, and we'll work on it from there.
We'll put the responsibility on the developers, but we'll give them access to it in a very controlled way. And you know, so but anyways, that's not why I actually brought this up. Well, the reason I brought it up is because Wynn Las Vegas, which is a big old hotel on the Las Vegas Strip.
I walked through the lobby. By the way, if you're ever there and you're looking for something to do, taking a walking tour, that's the thing to do. It's awesome. You just walk through all the lobbies.
That is cool. I did. I last time I went to Vegas,
it took like 20,000 steps if you do it too.
So I believe it. Last time I went to Vegas, our friends got tickets to one of the nightclubs in Wynn, and they were like, hey, we're gonna be in this nightclub, you guys, y'all should come. And my girlfriend and I were like,
okay, so I'm dumb here, so you need tickets to get into a nightclub?
Heck yeah, man. These are big shows, and like it doesn't come with drinks and stuff because it's like there's a DJ.
Is it like in The Mask, remember that with Jim Carrey?
Yes.
Where he's singing and they're sitting at tables, they have food, but they're watching a show.
No. It's similar, but it's like you got like a
that's DJ. A nightclub in my head. That's what I think of.
Yeah, you got like a DJ and they got a bar, and it's like a bar dance, but it's just that you get these like
a ticket.
Yeah.
It's just like an entry ticket?
Well, yeah, you're basically paying a fee to get in.
Oh, okay.
And buy tickets ahead of time. But it was like $65. And just like from and my girlfriend and I went and saw the Magicians, Penn and Teller, which
fantastic. I didn't know that.
Fantastic.
When did I miss this?
Oh
my gosh, I'm so jealous. When we went, we did a Cirque du Soleil thing because Jesse wanted to go watch that. Yeah. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But next time we're doing Penn and Teller because I want to watch them.
They're fantastic. They're so good.
Man.
Do
they have someone come onto the show from their... what is it called? Fool Us? Like, hey, this person fooled us. Now he'll fool you.
No, they didn't do that to us.
Because that's the whole thing. Like, if you win, you get to go to Las Vegas and perform.
Yeah, they didn't do that to us. They didn't have one of them on for us. But it was just so good. It was such a good show. But anyway, so we showed up kind of late, and we ended up not... We didn't want to go into the nightclub because it was like... Our buddies paid $65 a head to get in with something crazy like that. And they were like... or maybe it was $30. Doesn't matter. The club was going to be closing down too soon, so we were like, "Well, we'll just play. We'll gamble a little in the Wynn lobby."
Can you use the tickets another day?
No. Yeah,
friends.
I know. So we just chilled in the Wynn lobby and gambled for a while, and then. And then when our friends were finally done, they came out. We ended up just staying in the Wynn lobby till like 5 a.m. before we finally went back to the hotel rooms. It was nuts.
Your trip is so different than mine.
I know. But it was,
it was so great. I woke up early. I swam in the pool because it was already warm out. Had a nice breakfast. We walked through all the lobbies. We went to the M&M store. We tried the Cokes of the world. It was a lot of fun. And then when it got dark out, we went to a nice dinner and got home early for bed.
Yeah. you know what? I'm pretty sure we were awake at entirely opposite periods. Like, while you were asleep, I was awake and vice versa.
Yes, it sounds like it.
But anyways, this is the reason I brought this up is Wynn has went out and bought an Echo for every room, an Amazon Echo.
Wow, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I really like that.
I really like it too. And their whole premise is like they've got phones in the rooms that you pick up and can talk to the front desk, but they're like, there's all sorts of tasks that don't need to be like ordering. One of the ideas, like, you know, ordering room service. Like if you could just order room service, or if all the lights are connected to the Echo in the room, so you can turn on and off all your lights. And
I wonder how much a night a dollar it is.
That was a sentence.
Yeah. Wow. Because to have all the light bulbs connected, now you're talking, which that may be like a future thingy, but
yeah,
that's pretty cool. I mean, I like the idea of being able to order room service or just saying like, get me a taxi, I'm going.
Right. Asking questions. There's also the potential to turn on the devices without saying the wake word. Where am I at? In partnership with Amazon, becoming the first resort in the world in which guests can verbally control every aspect of lighting, temperature, audio, visual components of your hotel room is yet another example of leadership in the world of technology for all the benefits of our guests. I don't know. I like it. I like the idea because that was the big, honestly, I miss the Google Home. Like, I'm surprised how much I miss it. But one of the biggest advantages to it was it's really difficult for anybody else to use my room when I'm not around because of the lighting situation. And the party that we had on Friday night was a perfect example of people would walk in and hit the light switch, which all my computers are connected to. And it didn't work well. Whereas if we had the Google Home and you could just walk in and be like, okay, Google, turn the lights on, you know, and that's the advantage that the
Echo. Did you just die a little bit that nothing happened?
Yeah. Little twinge. I've done that example a couple of times, and the sadness is not as palpable anymore. But
should have signed up for our giveaway.
I know. And turns out the winner is Matthew. So
weird. Congratulations.
I don't know who that is, but I sent you an email. I don't know. So. Very cool. I'm excited to see you. I like the idea of this sort of thing. Obviously, you know, this is making sense for Wynn. Like you said, it's a bigger infrastructure project, but it just is a centralized control for your home. It really is making a lot of progress in that route. And as a concierge, for your experience there's a lot of potential there. And
I wonder if it's like it's all just on by default, or if you got to turn it on, like, you know, if you have privacy concerns or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that that's part of their deal is that they're doing like it, working with Amazon to get certain functionality turned on and off, so that like you can't order anything through Amazon on it, whereas you normally can on the Echo, you know, stuff like
that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Buy me some toothpaste.
Exactly. But I don't know. I like it. I like where their head's at. I like where it's going. It's very exciting.
And yeah, this has totally become a thing.
Yeah.
I can tell. Like, they're going to start, and then quickly others are going to be like, whoa. Yeah. Okay, this is a thing.
Timing of this is perfect because CES is right around the corner.
Because, like, we're going to get Google Homes and Chromecast into every single building, and all you got to do is log in when you get there.
Yeah.
Boom. You got all your content ready to go.
Right, yeah. You just talk at the thing and YouTube
it's
will
like
pop up
Chromebook.
On that.
I mean, that's our whole thing, right? Yep. You just sign into the computer. Okay. It's all your stuff.
Yep. I like it. I love it. And this is great because it's all, you know, gearing up right before CES Las Vegas. And and everybody's like, what room, you know, what hotel do you want to stay in? I kind of like the fact that Vegas has realized that CES is a big deal and that they can, it's worth catering to that crowd with the hotels. And so they're, you know, they try to create all sorts of high techy sort of infrastructure so that they're
by the way, guests. Yeah, this is a little show planning live. I have two friends going to CES this year, so we need to figure out how to get them to do some live reporting on our behalf.
Ah, yes. Okay.
So we'll get there.
When is CES this year?
I don't know. It's like
it's always
in January. It's like the 9th, I think.
I'm gonna say this always happens to us. We do the post diction show, the prediction show, and then CES, and it's like overwhelming. I'm overworked, James.
Yeah, it's coming up. Which we talked about going this year, and then my wife had to go and get pregnant. I know, right? But that's all right. Yeah, but we got some feet on the ground. We're gonna make it happen.
I like it. January 5th to the 8th. All right, so we'll be talking about it January 8th, 9th, 8th, January 8th.
Okay, cool. So there's another startup that I wanted to talk about. It's interesting.
Yeah.
it's in the market that I love the most. It's called Open Door. So it's the Reels Estate. And it's a company that has figured out how it's, how do I want to say it? Honestly, they're doing the business model that I want to do, but I do not have the money to do what they're doing. And neither did they until they just got like a $200 million in funding. So now they can do what I want to do. If I had that kind of money, I would do it myself. So here's the idea is real estate is a relatively inefficient market. In other words, or it's not very liquid. Like if you wanted to sell your house tomorrow, like you don't just sell it tomorrow.
Yeah.
there's a process. You have to, you have to list it for one. Well, first of all, you got to find someone. How do I want to say it? You got to find someone to help you list it, unless you do it on your own. But anyways, you're going to clean, you're going to take pictures, you might do some repairs. You get it listed, and then someone finds it, makes you an offer. You have some bartering back and forth. There's a ton of paperwork to fill out, and then there's a closing period because most people don't pay cash for a house, and so that takes a certain amount of time. And then you go through closing, and it sells. That's kind of the thought process. It takes time. So the question is, well, how do you speed that up? Because there's some people, there are some people who their goal is to get top dollar for their property.
Right.
And, you know, and that's like, I would say most people who you talk to, like, that's true, right? Like,
right.
I would sell for top dollar. That's what I want. However, there are others where there are things that are higher premium than just price. For example, time being one of them.
Right.
Where if you've got a new job and you're moving, like you're going to be a little flexible on the price to make a quick sale.
Right. Right. You don't have any, you're put into a position and you need to move and you need money. So let's do it.
There's a few others. Someone passes away in your family, tax bill is coming and you have to pay the tax bill. I mean, it's sad, but you got to pay the tax bill. And the way to do it is to dispose of the property to come up with the money to pay the, to pay the tax.
Right.
Whether it's property tax, estate tax, whatever, it's all there. And so, so that's another situation where it's like, dude, I don't need top dollar. I just get rid of it.
Right.
So, lots of things. Another good one is there's a lot of repairs that have to happen and you don't feel like doing it. You've lost energy. You're just ready to move on with your life and go on. So you don't want to have the drawn out process. You don't want to have people traipsing through your house and telling you, oh, can you fix this? Can you fix that? Can you fix this? And this and this.
No, I can't.
Yeah. Well, there's some people where they write in the ad, like, as is, deal with it. I looked at a property this evening that's what was written on the thing, as is. So
is that a sign to you, like, where you're like, yeah, this is the one I want? Is that like,
it's definitely it's a positive.
A lot of people see it as a red flag. You see it as a green light. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, so that's how that is. So this company, Open Door, has realized that there are these issues out there, and they're able to use a little bit of technology and some guts to make this work. So there are certain startups. Zillow and Redfin are two of them, where they help you list a property. You don't have to go through an agent if you don't want to. It's not the most, doesn't totally make it a liquid type of asset anymore because you still got to list it and it's not as good as the MLS, but it's nice. It helps you get kind of an agreed upon value. There's some other good stuff that relate to them. And the primary way that Zillow and Redfin make money is through Zillow's through advertising. Agents advertise their services. So when you go onto a listing, you could say, like, make an offer, talk to the agent, and you do that. That's how they make most of their money. Redfin actually has their own agents that they don't charge a commission. They're all on salary, and they charge a little less. And so the idea is if you see a property on Redfin, you can use one of their agents to buy it. And so they're more traditional in that sense. They just don't have an MLS system. They got their own system. So there are things like that. And not surprisingly, agents don't love those two systems. So Opendoor, crazy idea. Here's what it is. And again, like, if I could do this, I would do it. And I think they're doing some really cool things. First of all, Zillow and Redfin focus mostly on the buyers, right? Helping buyers find a better property, do some comparisons, that kind of stuff. Opendoor focuses on the sellers.
Okay.
And here's what they do. They come up to you and say, we've got a fancy magical algorithm that gives us an estimate of what you think your house is actually worth.
Okay.
We are going to pay you that.
Oh.
But we're going to consider, how do I want to say it? It's a minimum of a 6% fee, and then there's a sliding scale of 0 to 6% additional percentage on top of their fee for the amount of risk that you have. So if it's like, yeah, we feel really good about our estimate, well, we're only going to charge you a 6% fee. So if they're offering you $100,000 for your house, they're actually offering you $94,000 for your house.
Obviously, this is not a house in the Bay Area.
Yeah. I'm trying to do the math so it's easy.
I gotcha.
And so that's kind of the idea. Is they say, yeah, your house is worth $100,000, but we're only going to pay you
$94,000. Okay.
That's kind of the idea. Right. Unless you think it's really risky, then they're only going to pay you $88,000.
Right, okay.
Of whatever we think that value is based on our magic algorithm, which is based on a bunch of other things, kind of like Zillow's Zestimate. And then what they do is they literally like, here's a cash offer. But you cash. That's where that $210 million comes in.
Right, yeah, that's a...
And the idea is it's like, we'll have your money in 15 days. No problem. We'll write you a check type of thing.
For $94,000.
By the way, there are investors. They started with one, and now this is how they roll. I know a guy where I listen to his podcast. I don't know him. He's like, oh yeah, I buy and sell like 300 properties a year. I'm like, what? and he goes, he's doing exactly this. Where then what he does is, and they figured out a way to do it technologically. Is then what they do, and it's the whole like the algorithm thing is awesome. And so then they buy your house.
Right.
And then what they do is they list it on the MLS.
Right.
And sell it themselves for 100% of what the price is worth.
Right. And yeah.
And they just like, they go, this is a numbers game. We will do this with enough properties that, that 6 to 10% starts to add up. Usually the way that flippers do it is a similar idea, except you take like 15% just right off the top minus whatever repairs have to be made.
Right.
And that's the other thing is like, if there are some, based on the algorithm, if it doesn't quite meet it, they will sometimes have the seller pay to have repairs made until it meets whatever that number is. But I mean, we're talking like lightweight stuff. And then what's cool about it is they don't have any agents, no agents on the selling side of it. It's here's a 24/7 access code to get in, check it out. When you're ready, we'll just roll just like normal.
That's interesting. That's fun. Cause it's like, it's cool. Cause it's like you said, it's not necessarily a tech thing. It's kind of we're the automation part of it, the web server backend of it, the algorithm part of it, those really only are possible because it's got enough money to be just a massive scale house flipping entity. And their value proposition is, we'll just give you the money now. Boom.
Yeah, so the idea behind the stock market is that the market is perfect. Everyone has all the same information at the same time.
Yeah.
So the price reflects what the actual price is at all times. Real estate is not like that. It's an imperfect market. And so you can have situations like this where people just have different motivations for selling.
Right.
And so if you can find those people, which like that's the trick,
Right, but if you're
out there,
I gotta say, but if I need to move and I know of this service, or you know, I'll look to it because you know, right. Because yeah, huh? I like that.
So it adds some liquidity to the market. So this guy who's writing about it, he was like, I think this is cool. It's like they have a sustainable business model to make money. Like someone like me cannot just come along and redo what they're doing.
Right.
As much as I would love to.
Well, yeah, because you just need a gigantic amount of
I think that capital. If I had a benefactor, like an investor of some sort, I'd be all over this. And my whole model would be you'd find a house where like that is what it is. You don't get crazy. Like maybe you do love off 15% and then it's just carpet paint.
Right.
and you're like, we will be here and here for a week. What can we do in a week?
Let me see. And you know what will be really interesting too is because there will be competitors, but the competition will become it's how much do we think the house is worth? How much do we think we can sell the house for? And versus like how much will it cost us to sell it? Because I could see, you know, I could see there be one, you know, maybe this company, their whole thing is we do super minimal repairs. And so we're going to sell the house for less, but we're going to take less of a percentage. So like one company might be like, we take 6%, but we don't sell the house for as much. So this is our number. Whereas a competitor could look at the same house and say, look, we've got all the infrastructure to do improvements on the house and make it worth more, but it costs us more. So we're going to take 15%. And then all of a sudden,
I know some guys who like, they're kind of like, we look for houses where it needs 40 grand to 100 grand worth of work put into it.
Right.
Like, that's the kind of house that we want to buy. I'm like, wow, that's cool.
Right.
And then we do it ourselves. And that's how we make the money. And I get that. And they were saying, too, with this article, it's like, as they get going, they'll get better and better at this algorithm. And so that risk profile, that 0 to 6,
right.
Like, yeah, first they all might be 6, but eventually they're going to get closer and closer to 0 as it gets better.
Right.
And that'll be super competitive. And like, and it's good for people who need to get out. We weren't looking for that premium.
I like it.
Yeah, open door. They're like, most startups should try to emulate what these guys are doing. It's good stuff. It's that combination of kind of a gutsy move and using algorithms to help make them smarter. Got to get some AI in there. That's the new word.
Yeah, right. Got to use some machine learning to tune our algorithms. Yeah.
They got to learn to learn. That's what it's about. If you're not learning to learn, you're dying.
Exactly. This is my question, James, though. When you move, how do you get there? What sort of transportation you use? Oh, yeah, you drive yourself? Or are you being...
Dude, who drives themselves anymore? Losers. Come on.
So
last 2016.
Right. So, self-driving cars are doing their thing. Uber made a big announcement this week that they were going to... they had been doing self-driving cars in Detroit. No, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh.
Okay, I know that from
doing that thing you the do. Oneaters?
Okay,
there we go. That is from the Oneaters. Right, cool. Yeah,
I just figured maybe that was referencing something else, and you were referencing the original source. But we're good.
No. That's from everything I know. That's from the thing you do.
yep. Cool. We're the right age.
Yeah. So they had been doing self-driving cars in Pittsburgh, and where like you could hail a car and then maybe it'd be a self-driving car that would come and pick you up and take you somewhere where you're going, and everybody was very excited because it was a cool little demonstration of self-driving cars. Well, they decided to get all crazy and do this in San Francisco and open it up, which from a PR perspective was a really smart move because they'd been doing this in Pittsburgh for months. They do it for a day in San Francisco and it's like,
oh yeah,
every news outlet in the around is talking about how, oh my gosh, self-driving cars in San Francisco. You're like, seriously, this is not new.
Especially the way they're doing it too.
Right, yeah. And it's a and this is important to know, but it's because it's a similar to Tesla's where they've got an engineer sitting behind the wheel as the machine's driving that can do a takeover at any time. So it's more like really intelligent assistive driving as opposed to full-blown self-driving. Because Google did a...
What? Waymo or whatever they're calling themselves.
Yeah, right. We're not there yet, James. We're not there.
Oh, sorry.
So Google did a demonstration this week as well, where they had a blind dude take a drive around Austin, I think it was, somewhere in Texas, in a car. And that was seen as like this, you know, this is the holy grail, right? That that a blind person can use this machine, because that means that it's a fully autonomous, no takeover. Seemed like a big deal. Once again, Google's been doing this for a year in Cupertino, or Mountain View, I mean. But they finally did a PR move to actually like make a big deal about it. All of a sudden, news is talking about it. But it's what Uber is doing isn't like that. This is a machine where it's a lot of steps beyond cruise control, but it's more similar to cruise control than it is to what Google's doing. It's just a super intelligent cruise control. And the reason why that's a big deal is because California found out that Uber had turned on the service with everybody else, and they read the news, and they immediately started sending cease and desist to Uber, saying,
"Oh yeah,
y'all need a permit in order to have self-driving cars." Because turns out California has some of the...
I love Uber. They're totally just like we're going to seek permission on everything.
What?
No.
Forgiveness.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Man, I ruined that. We're going to seek forgiveness on everything.
Exactly. And this is just a classic, like, and I think what... California immediately came back, shot it down. The legal department inside of Uber was like, yeah, y'all better stop until we figure this out with California, because this can be a problem. But Uber's responding, it's like a $150 permit per car, and you have to go through the permitting process to get it done. So it's not like it's this arduous, expensive thing. You just need a permit in order to be testing these on open roads. And Uber came back and said, no, we don't want to do it, because it's not a self-driving car. And you're like, wait? Yeah, because
I feel like that's how you've been advertising.
I was going to say, isn't that the whole point of what you've been saying? But they're sitting there saying, you know, it's like Tesla's cruise control, or where Tesla's autopilot, where it's not self-driving, it's not cruise control, it's somewhere in the middle, but it requires a driver to be in the seat, paying attention all time, capable of taking over, just like cruise control. It just so happens that it can stop at red lights and avoid some most of the time. Not always. Actually, that was another big thing.
Yeah,
was that in the 24 hours that the machine, or that they were doing the program before they stopped, one of the cars ran a red light. And now they're like in this big, like, was the driver driving? Was the, you know, or was the, was the car driving?
Uber.
Uber's claiming that the driver was driving, but you're like, that's definitely what I would claim if my self-driving car ran a red light. So yeah, they're in all sorts of hot water right now. But I don't know. It's
you know what though? I mean, it's not just San Francisco. They did the exact same thing in Europe with Uber Pop, and because I was reading about this, where they were like, in Spain. Several months ago, it was December 9th of 2014, they got in trouble in Madrid for doing the exact same thing, where they were like, they just went in, started up Uber, and we're like, all right, we're giving out a taxi service. And Europe's, you think the U.S. taxi system is highly locked down.
Right.
Oh, no. Europe is like, it's pretty unbelievable. And so they were just like, no, you can't do that. Suspended the service. They are also fighting battles in Netherlands, Germany, France, and Italy. And eventually it went up to the, or it's going to, I couldn't totally tell, but to the EU court system, which would be like our Supreme Court thing.
Right.
Where it's like, all right, what are you guys? Because Uber keeps going, no, we're just technology. We're not in charge of the drivers, not in charge of the cars.
It's a ride sharing thing. We're just, yeah.
We just got a tech. You know, that's it. We're not a taxi service.
We're just bringing two people together. We're like a text messaging service.
Yeah.
Basically, between two random strangers, one who has a car and one who doesn't. And mm-hmm. we also do payments, and we also do mapping, and we also, like, Which, you know, yeah, it's an interesting argument they're making, but it's also part of the reason why they want to get on these self-driving car things so quickly, because to them, this is a continual, perpetual argument, and as soon as there's no drivers involved, the argument, they can make even a more aggressive argument to the, we're not a taxi company.
Perhaps.
Or they'll just go full blown.
Well, definitely, so like in the EU, the question is, are they a transportation company or not?
Right.
So even if it's autonomous, dude, you're a transportation company.
Right, and it's just a different argument, and they'll be taxed differently, they think, and I don't know, I can understand why they're making this move. But yeah, well, and it's funny, because a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Otto, which is the self-driving truck company that they bought. And
yeah,
that's the company.
Surprise.
I was going to say, yeah, that. And if you remember that story, they did a demonstration in Nevada, like that was strictly against the rules that had been written. But in the rules, there were no consequences. There was no punishment or penalty for breaking the rules. So they're like, yeah, we broke the rules. What up? Okay. And so I'm not surprised they fit in so well at Uber. It's Facebook's move fast and break stuff, you know. And
yeah, they're just having to be doing it with cars.
I know, that's it's people's lives are in the balance. But this is interesting. It's, you know, a couple of months ago, Apple, the news inside of Apple is that they're no longer going to be building a car, which is what I've been saying since the beginning, that they'd never actually build a car. So big surprise, they're still not building a car, but they're just building the technology inside the car. So one of the thoughts is that they're building just the self-driving software. Well, it turns out kind of everybody's moving in that direction. Alphabet, who obviously the parent company of Google, and their Google X Pro, their X division, which was doing all the self-driving car stuff. They had built those like little pod cars without the steering wheels.
I remember them, the smiley faces on them.
Yeah, and they were pretty cool. Well, they've decided two things. Number one, they're like fully out of the we're gonna build cars thing. They're not gonna try it anymore. They're going to get hardware manufacturing partners. You know, so Ford and Chevy and Toyota and all your different car companies, and they're just going to do, they want to do the software side of that. They want to be doing the service, which isn't shocking. That's kind of like, it was sort of a little jaunt into the world of maybe we want to build cars that seemed very non-committal there for a couple of months, and now they're back into the, we're going to be doing this. But the other big news that they that came out of it is that Alphabet finally officially spun the self-driving car program out of the X Labs and into its own company called Waymo.
Worst name ever.
Waymo Choices. Why don't you like the name Waymo?
Because I feel like you just said it and demonstrated the issue with it. It's like, oh, it's the way of mobility or whatever.
A new way forward in mobility. Waymo.
I'm like, it's too cutesy. It sounds dumb.
Well, the problem is that the parent company's name is Alphabet, which means that they've got to cover the entire alphabet. And how are you going to get to W? They've already got X, which was pretty good, because that's a tough one. Z, I think they've got Z covered. But W is the other hard one. So they've got all the hard letters, and now they can just fill in the rest of the alphabet.
Still got to worry about
as time goes on.
They still got to worry about Q.
Q is not quite as, you know, quest, dude. Quiet, quarterly.
You play the alphabet game driving on the street. That's not an easy one.
You know, it's not an easy one, but it's not nearly as hard as X.
Yeah, we're starting to kind of cheat in. There's like X.
Yeah.
Done.
Decided not to get into the xylophone market, evidently.
I don't know. I don't love the name. Maybe it'll grow
on me. I know. I don't like it. It's dumb, kind of.
Maybe it'll grow on me.
Yeah, but
that feels like made by committee. That's what that feels like to me. Yeah. No one actually has a real vision for it.
Well, and also, I mean, let's, you know,
like Calico or whatever their I one is, like, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool name. Even Google X, you're like, ooh, mysterious.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, people come some up
marketer,
with them.
Some NBA marketer thought of it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what the worst part about it is? Honestly, it's...
And we'll reuse the Google Wave logo. It's perfect.
I know. Yeah. Right, yeah. And it's the a new way forward in mobility. Waymo. Way mobility. Yeah, I don't know. The more I think about it, it's
way
funny.
More complicated than it needs to be.
There we go. Now, see, if you just to call it Waymo, that doesn't, the name itself doesn't bother me. It's like how they're like, they're walking forward and like presenting it like it's like super clever, and it's not really very clever. It's fine.
Waymo, wait. Let me explain it to you. It's awesome.
No.
It's good. No, seriously.
But it's,
we got the URL for this one. It's a good one.
All right, no, that's the one that always gets me. It's a 5-letter URL that they could afford.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, I look at this. And I say, this is really good so news true. because Google, like the whole idea of the X program is that it's where they sink all of their money until it can really become, you know, a full featured. It needs a lot more going on, and the program just keeps growing. They keep making advances at a quick pace, and it will be really interesting to see in a couple of years where this is. You know, are they in any cars? You know, because unlike Tesla and Uber, where they are in that middle ground of, no, you still need a driver who is legally able to take responsibility of the car by not being drunk, being focused and paying attention. Google has continued to express that, no, they're not. Their goal is the complete autonomy, that no, they yeah. want cars that don't have steering wheels, period. And that's, and they won't be satisfied. They won't sell it until they can get there. And they seem pretty excited about, you know, where they're going and with that and what they're capable of. So I don't know. I like it. I like where their head's at. But it would, the other, yeah. Uber also made the same announcement, by the way, about not that they're going to change their name to Waymo, but that they're not going to build any cars. They're like, nah, we're going to continue to partner with Volvo and just do our thing. We're not going to get into car manufacturing, which I'm really surprised. I can't tell if it's just a slow news cycle, so these companies, so all the news are like outlets are just trying to make a story out of this. But I'm like, this is not surprising that they're not going to try to go toe to toe with some of the world's largest manufacturing companies and start their own, you know, manufacturing. That's just doesn't make any sense.
Too is like. The future for all this to really work well is electric, and they're kind of hanging around waiting for that. And
right,
it's probably something where it's hard to just get patents to make a car.
I'm sure it's incredibly expensive, and if you're only, and Google is going to look at it and be like, no, we'd much rather be, it's like Android, we'd much rather be the software than the hardware. Put the software on every single machine, especially because it's such a slow-growing market. It's not like phones where everybody gets a new phone every 2 years. They're, you know, if you're going to do this, it's going to be a major effort, and you don't want to be in a small segment of just your own car. It's a bad financial direction. You want to work with the hardware that already exists. You know, Apple's looking at it sort of like, why don't they build TVs? Why do they build little dongles for TVs? Because that's not a, TVs aren't a good market. Dongles for the TV is a good market. That's why they build.
Right.
That's why the Apple TV is what it is, and it's not a giant piece of glass. And that's why they're going to build cars the way that they build it, and they're going to, or that's why they're going to. They want to get into the car market the way that they want to, because they're like, no, the hardware is fine. It's not a good market for us to get into. It's not something we can easily disrupt. What we can disrupt is how the intelligence of the car works, and that's what they want to do and have wanted to do all along. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see. So you got another article that you want to throw that one in there?
We kind of already covered it. It's the title of it's horrible. It's the Trump administration could be Uber's saving grace, which sure, whatever. But it does just did a really good job of chronicling all of the legal battles that they're going through, which was my whole thing about, man, they're really into seeking forgiveness over permission. Just like, we're just going to go for it, see what happens. And yep. And so, which, you know, that's we talked about that, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Where I was like, that fundamentally feels wrong to me.
Yeah.
But that's Uber's, that's their modus operandi, you know, just kind of a disregard for the rules. We're going to change the world whether they like it or not. And it kind of seems to be working, I guess. I don't know.
Seems, yeah, I'd say it seems to be working. at least so far. Well, yeah, it's just, you know, it's funny that Facebook has become famous for the move fast and break stuff, because they don't anymore. They actually move quite slowly and try really, really, really hard not to break anything. But
well, they've got a. I've been there. I work for one of those companies, right? Like,
yeah.
Let's not move the printing needle too much, folks. We're not dependent on this money. So.
Yeah, exactly. it's a
be careful.
It's a fun sounding platitude, and when you're really small and, you know, and nimble, you can get away with that a little bit more just because of the nature of your users. But the fact that Facebook has only ever gone down in like two circumstances, and they were like the domain name routers went down sort of situations, like, which Facebook can't necessarily stop that from, you know, you from getting to the, that wasn't Facebook's fault. Like, the fact
one that could argue they broke the trending news feed.
Yeah, that's true.
A couple times, pretty fast.
But they,
something that I was like, oh, is that a thing?
Yeah. Well, but what it actually refers to is like, and where that idea came from was early on in their development, they used to not do like closed tests and revisions. They used to just make updates and push them out really fast. And they didn't have an infrastructure for doing quality assurance stuff. They just put things up there. And, but Mark was
which is kind of awesome.
It is. And but Mark was obsessive about getting engineers who could do that without breaking the website, which should tell you this, the level of talent involved in the engineers in the early stages of Facebook. Now they do giant QA systems, and they have entire like server farms dedicated to running all of their updates before anything goes live. But
I was reading an article that was talking about artificial intelligence, and it was talking about the different companies and kind of their approaches to it, and they're like, Google's super open about everything, and it's pretty clear how they want to make money.
Yeah.
Using it and have it be sustainable. And then they said Facebook, they're like, it's for totally selfish things. They're sharing what they're doing, but all the work they're doing is for themselves to make Facebook better,
right?
Not to like app, like with Google, like they got an open API,
right?
That's the TensorFlow, right? Is that the
TensorFlow? Answer? Yeah,
TensorFlow. And that's one of the ways they're going to do it. And they're building it into their cloud so that anybody and everybody can access it and use it. Like, that's their thing. Super open. Talked about Microsoft's kind of sitting somewhere in the middle. They're doing their own research. It's pretty cool. They've got an API. It's not quite as robust. They're pretty open about it. Like, and then there's Apple, who says they're going to start sharing with the world. We'll see.
Yeah.
and which I thought was also interesting is a lot of the AI research used to be done in universities by scientists and faculties and stuff. And the U.S. government has just not been funding it nearly to the degree that some think that they should. And so a bunch of these scientists are now working for these big companies. Essentially, those companies have become their benefactors, their patrons, right, if you will. But what's interesting about it is the people they're hiring are fundamentally scientists who like to publish, who like to collaborate and share like they would do in a university setting.
Right.
And so that's what you're seeing these companies do, because they want to keep their scientists happy.
Right.
And so But Facebook, again, yeah, they've got huge servers and they're checking everything, and AI is one of those, and it's for just to make sure that Facebook stays on top, which I don't blame them. You don't want to become number two, because that becomes a distant number two.
That is not fun to not in a fun position to be in. But anyways. Self-driving cars, Facebook. They're coming. Okay, yeah, right. I won't stop here.
How about that?
There we go.
Their goal is to stay number one with messaging apps. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like it's true.
Yeah.
So they've done what any super innovative company would do to test things, to make sure it doesn't break, and to really push the bounds with it. They've come up with this really crazy idea. Are you ready for it? I mean, like, this one's a new one here.
Yeah.
You can go into Messenger now, once you update it to the latest app, and there's a camera on it, and you can send somebody a message with the camera. So what you do, okay, so let me see if I can explain this, because it's a crazy concept. You take a picture.
Okay.
And then you can put a filter on top of that picture.
Okay.
Like, if you wanted to be like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you could have reindeers and a red nose just layered right on top of you.
You could even
add your own text. You could write stuff on top of the photo. And then you could send it to your friends. And then they would see that. And that would be like the start of a conversation.
Okay.
But here's the catch. It doesn't disappear after 10 seconds. Stays there.
Whoa.
What? Totally not a Snapchat clone at all. Don't worry about it. It's different. Plus, if you write certain keywords in your text box, they'll say, hey, we recognize this word. Would you like to add this picture that has to do with this word?
I like it more when they just copy Snapchat and are like, we're copying Snapchat because that's what we're doing.
That's Instagram who does that. So that's what Facebook came out with this week. New photo filters.
Nice. That's pretty exciting. I'm looking at it. I saw you sent me one.
Turns out I have multiple Matthews in Facebook. And in Messenger, it just says your first name and your... Neither one of you have very good profile photos, I should say.
I
sent it to a Matthew, and then it was like, all right, sent to Matthew, and I looked at the name and went, that's the wrong Matthew. And it was a goofy, like, I've got a Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer look and filter and being goofy, and he's like my brother-in-law. I've met like twice, and I was like, sweet. Sent him another message. Sorry, wrong Matthew. Merry Christmas. So there's that little bit of confusion. But yeah, super fun. Check it out. I don't know. Snapchat's dead to me, so I'm glad there's an alternative.
Snapchat's dead to me. Yeah, I guess.
Well, you can't even group chat with Snapchat. Oh, wait. Yes, you can. They just rolled that out. Now you can group chat up to not just 10 friends. Well, not 20 friends, but 16 friends.
That's a lot of friends.
At once.
All at the same time, simultaneously?
Kind of, but everyone only gets to see the message for up to 10 seconds, and then it disappears. So hopefully you remember what your friend wrote.
10 cents.
Not exactly a planning app.
Collectively?
No, that would be awesome. There's a bit of game theory.
Yeah.
Dude, how, like, that would be like, you'd be on it, because...
Yeah, you don't
like. What if it was like? It would be interesting. It'd be like do musical chairs, where it's like, it's 10 seconds. So if you, how do I want to say it? It's 10 seconds for everybody who's there, minus 10 seconds.
Right.
And everyone gets up to 10 seconds to watch to read it, and so. So if everyone's nice, there may be a little left over for the last person, or the last person just like, oh, you don't get to see it. Sorry. Gosh.
That'd be pretty fun. That's actually a pretty good idea.
That feels like if you could figure out how to make a bot that would help out with that.
Yeah. Like,
that would be a fun channel game thing to do on one of the messaging platforms.
That's a pretty good idea, James.
Y'all have an incentive to see it to read it as fast as you can. Because everyone else is. Oh, yeah, I know.
I like it.
I know.
I'm down. Let's build it, James.
So anyway, so those are your messaging app updates. I think we're starting to hit maturity on messenger apps.
Yeah.
Maybe we were there 6 months ago. I feel like that's also true.
Yeah, I mean, I think the next stage, honestly, is...
We're all hitting parity now.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, it's like the next feature that really has a chance to take off is who does the best integration with bots. And it's like, obviously, Google's got their Allo thing that they're trying to figure out. Artificial
intelligent bots.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Trying to figure out what's the best interface for that. How much does it pay attention? Facebook has got their like bots plugin, and Microsoft has got their thing with their bots and how they're trying to build it. I think it's like,
I don't really have a messaging app, but yeah.
Well, except Skype.
Yes,
I think that's one of the biggest messaging apps on the planet. I'm not sure, but
is it?
Yeah, it's
okay.
You and I don't use it, but that's because we don't do business.
I use it for work all the time.
Yeah,
that's how we all talk.
It's a Skype. Yeah. Skype.
But it's IMing. I guess that's a messaging.
Yeah, app. Skype counts.
Okay.
Yeah, I. Yeah, and Facebook or Apple, obviously, they're so weird with their AI. Like, are they doing it or aren't they? Are they going this direction or not? I don't know. I
pointed up the dollar and got all the Star Wars stickers.
Oh, yeah.
Thing.
It's pretty nice.
They're all animated. I like that.
That is pretty nice.
I like animated stickers. That's a thing now.
I got the, I got.
GIF, I guess.
It's pretty much animated. It's a GIF sticker, a GIFer.
Giffer. I got the Mario Run one. I think that's about it.
Oh, yeah, but it comes with that, right? I mean, that's
yeah.
I've started. You know what got me with the stickers? Because I thought this was possible, but I'd never actually played around with stickers. But it's the fact that you could stick them anywhere. You can just like put it right on top of somebody else's message. Which for all of our listeners that are like, I thought you guys were like tech nerds that paid attention to everything. Like, yeah, I know. And I was like vaguely aware that it was possible, but I was like, I'm not going to play with stickers. I'm an adult. Like, why would I play with stickers? But now that I've actually done it, I was like, I should have gotten on this bandwagon sooner.
I find that like doing the special message sending things, like that was fun for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, we've got a new one that you can send. I'm like, oh yeah, it does that.
A new one. That's my issue.
Give me
30. That's what Snapchat has done so well with the feature, with the filters, is they've got like 10 standard ones and then two or three that they update constantly and cycle through. And for some reason, Apple, like, no, we've got to do entire system updates in order to add these new effects. No, Apple, that's not how this works. You update them frequently and quickly and just push them out all the time and whatever. I'm the world's most valuable company.
Really about it.
What do I know?
Yeah, right. Well,
And, you know, Apple... If Facebook says move fast and break stuff, Apple says move even slower and break nothing, literally ever.
Well, if you don't do anything, you can't break anything.
So. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Safest. Yeah.
I'm still an Apple fanboy.
I know.
I want it to work.
It's funny. I was driving along today, hanging out with my girlfriend, and I was playing with my watch. And at some point, I was just like, I really like the Apple Watch. I like it. Like, people who complain about it, people who don't understand it. Like, I still, to this day, I like it. I appreciate it. I use it a lot. Like, I like this company. It just, some of their stuff, man, it's just...
Well, they get the big rocks pretty good.
Yeah,
there's all those little rocks that doesn't wow you anymore.
And I'm even softening a little bit on the whole the MacBook Air or the new MacBooks with like the touch bar. I'm like, you know, I'm not sure that that's like this giant revelation of a development, but I'm sure it's not.
I agree with that.
But I like the idea of the programmable. Steve Jobs' like whole thing with the keyboard was like a physical keyboard on a phone is stupid. One keyboard, single purpose buttons, a whole lot of single purpose buttons don't make sense. But physical buttons have an advantage. There's no denying that. And I'm like, there's a middle ground. There's a middle ground between physical buttons and programmable buttons. And if Apple is heading towards a place where each one of the keys is programmable, I actually can get behind that. I still think that that's... I know you're like, that's dumb, but I don't know. We'll see.
I wish like if it could still have the movable parts and be programmable.
Yeah, cool. No, definitely. That's critical, is that each one of this...
Touch Bar is awesome. It's cool. I think it'll become better over time as more companies take advantage of it. And then they can actually point to like, oh, this is what you can do instead of just changing the volume.
Right.
And honestly, even if that's all it stays as, like, all right, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
It's the fact that that was it.
Yeah.
You know, you went so long and they went Touch Bar and we went, oh, yeah, like that would have been awesome in a list of four other cool things that you did.
Right, yeah. And it felt like they were doing a touchdown dance on, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. And then it was just weird stuff of like, whoa, we kept the headphone jack. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, and you can't actually charge your phone without an adapter.
You can't plug your phone directly into the device. So I'm like, oh my gosh. Wait,
what?
That does cue me up really well. I'm gonna skip around a little bit because
do it.
So there was this. This is super rumor, but
oh, I love.
I've been saying. I think I've been predicting this as long as we've been doing this show.
How long is that?
We're coming up on 6 years. In a couple of weeks. So. I believe Apple wants wireless power. Their goal is to have a device that has no ports, period. That's what they want. That's what they want to get to.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's why they like the Apple Watch, because the Apple Watch technically has no ports, and they love that's it. True. That's their ideal system. I think that that's what they want to do. But they really do believe with the iPhone that the only reason why it's got a port right now is because it needs power, a lot of power. And I think that they've definitely bought into the idea that a charging pad is a terrible solution. And I think if you look at how the watch is designed, it's a middle ground, right? It's the magnetic clasp. It just sits on it. But it's got a long wire, so you can move it around. Yeah. And like with your phone, the problem with the pad is that it has to be sitting on the pad in order to use it. Now, if they could... Hey, what?
It's horrible.
I know. It's just the worst. And what they really want is to be able to say, no, you just have to have the pad on your desk, and you can hold your phone a couple of feet away, use your phone, and it'll still power charge wirelessly. And as long as it's in range, it'll be charging wirelessly. Now, there are companies that are working on actually doing that. They've done demos at CES. One of the best-known companies is Energys.
It's like energy, but O-U-S.
Thank you for saving me there. Have you ever watched that video, the YouTube video of the kid that's like, he's trying to say, have you ever had a dream where you can do anything? But he like... has it like a brain meltdown? And just, have you ever had a dream where it's a dream where you can? And it's just like it's like 30 seconds, like the greatest video. And he finally nails it. He looks so glad, so happy with himself. But anyways,
is this a real thing or?
Oh yeah,
it was.
Yeah, okay. I'll send it to you. It's awesome. But. Yeah. So this company's been, Energys has been working on this, and the company has long rumored been working with Apple on long-range wireless charging for the iPhone. Last month, so the reason why everybody's, like, been talking about that is because earlier this year, they talked about how they were working with one of the world's largest consumer electronics brands, because they're trying to get this stuff out there with their long range power. Oh, hello. Sorry about that. and they're trying to really get that going, and they want everybody to know that they're working with Consumer Electronics. So the rumor was that they were working with Apple. That's who they were talking about, with their one of the world's largest consumer electronic companies. And this very much fits in with the narrative that Apple wants long-range wireless charging for the iPhone, that's their big long-term goal. Well, there was kind of an exciting development, if this is real and it's happening, and I believe with my whole soul, man, I believe more than I believe that there's a Santa Claus, that this is real. That basically what they did was they took a $10 million investment from the power management chip maker Dialog Semiconductor. The reason why this is a big deal is because not only did they take this giant investment from Dialog Semi, but they also have written a bunch of agreements where Dialog is basically taking over a lot of the different actual chip manufacturing technologies. Basically, Dialog Energys is going to be a separate company with a separate IP, but all of the manufacturing of any of the chips that's needed is going to be supplied through Dialog. And the reason why that's a big deal and kind of fits into this whole thing is because Dialog is a major supplier for Apple. So Apple is notoriously unwilling to work with small, unproven manufacturers. They want multiple potential sources. They want reliable manufacturers. And so basically the idea here is, if Apple has gotten to the point where they like the technology, they believe what Energys is doing, and they want to incorporate it into the iPhone 8, they will not do that with Energys as the manufacturer. They will only do it with a bigger partner. And so they would have sat down and done a negotiation with Energys and basically said, look, we will coordinate a deal with a much bigger manufacturer that we already have a great relationship with, and you take a bunch of money from them, they take over manufacturing, and then we can move forward on actually bringing it into the fold. And it very much reminds me of what they did with their that one company that ended up being an absolute disaster with the Sapphire glass manufacturing, where it was like Apple basically stepped in and said, hey, we want your technology, but you're not proven enough, so we're going to make a big investment and we'll set up some deals. That ended up being, like I said, a complete disaster, but you know, win some, you lose some. It's exciting. I think this is where we're going.
So is the idea like you build these chargers into MacBooks and stuff? Or they're just in the wall? Like, how does...
So, yeah, the idea of how...
You know what I mean? Or like the outlets?
Kind of. You plug it into what it is, you have a transmitter that you plug into an outlet. And then when you are within range of that transmitter, your phone starts to charge.
Okay. It's, like with an iMac, that'd be awesome, you know, because it's at your desk, whatever, it's already plugged into the wall, let that be a transmitter itself. Same with an Apple TV, things where you're like, yeah, this...
Make the wired things transmitters?
Yeah.
I actually think that, it's funny, I think Apple wants to go the opposite direction. I think what they want to have is, it's funny, we talked about this a really long ago. I think Apple's holy grail for a piece of glass... for an actual TV, would be no wires whatsoever. You just set it up, and you plug in one of these transmitters somewhere, or you already have it built into your house, and you can just turn it on. It's connected, so it connects over Wi-Fi to everything, and it's completely wireless, and I think that's what they want for everything. I think they go the other direction. I think they build iMacs that don't have any cables. Because right now, there's only one cable, and that's the final cable they want to cut, is that cable. And I think they want to cut it on everything. That's their dream. And I think, honestly, that's the reason why that's the reason why they're making really dumb things like not including adapter, you know, a cable that can directly connect your latest generation MacBook to your latest.
The idea is next year's iPhone isn't even going to have a poor, oh my gosh, people will flip out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll still have a...
You saw how much they flipped out with an audio head jack. To say you can't plug it in your computer now? Sorry.
Yeah, whatsoever. Just everything's wireless. Wirelessly wireless. Yeah.
Which, I mean, I can't tell you the last time I plugged mine in the computer. Anyways, once I flipped over to the iCloud switch and everything is now backed up online, I was like, I don't even know what I would do if I plugged it in.
I don't. Every once in a while, I plug my phone into my computer for various reasons, and the iTunes management software comes up, and I was like, stop everything you're doing. Just stop it. I'm fine without you. If I'm working in Xcode and actually building an app or whatever, and I plug it in to load the app, it upsets me every single time. Stop.
Okay, so you need to plug it in to develop apps.
Theoretically, yeah.
Hmm.
That's beatable, though. Well, you just build software into it. You just sit there and say, no, you connect. You would do like not
Trent make a wireless.
Yeah.
Do the handoff thing, the Bluetooth handoff, or
exactly
you're on the same Wi-Fi network.
And exactly, you got to be on the same Wi-Fi network. Your phone has to be. You say you already have to get like when you do it like your Xcode, your version of Xcode gets a connects to Apple server. Apple server has your phone or your development device, whatever, like in its database, they know that it's the device. You can't connect to any phone that's not already logged into the database. So mm-hmm. they would just be like, no, okay, now you can do it over Wi-Fi. And gotcha. You can sideload apps that way. It has to be
so, device. Question.
Yeah.
Are there any Android devices that are doing this wireless charging? Not the Touchstone.
Long distance wireless charging?
Yeah.
No siree.
WCs. Hmm.
Nah.
Because usually that's an indicator of where Apple's actually heading. Is there's an Android headset out there or two that's already doing it.
Yeah.
But they're not going to come out with a new phone until October, so I guess we got a ways to go.
Well, you know, you say that, but it's like nobody was really doing fingerprint scanning until, not at the level that Apple. That's a bad example.
I'm not saying it's as good. I'm just saying, which maybe that's the thing, right? It's Apple's is 3 feet away and everyone else is 2 millimeters.
Yep.
And
you can put a piece of paper between it, but it'll still work. But Apple, you can,
yeah,
you just put the transmitter on your desk and it'll connect and charge.
Yeah. And maybe that's going to be the way, I don't know. I just usually Android's got some sort of implementation somewhere. Again, usually not as integrated and good or whatever, but they at least have it.
Well, I think Apple would say they do. They already are ahead of us. They have wireless charging.
Yeah.
Because you can just set it down on the pad, but it's...
I'd be okay with the Touchstone, honestly. Like, right now, I have a little cardboard box that I put my phone inside of while it's charging.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I do. And and right now it's sitting on top of my Kindle, so it's as if it's on a pad.
Right, yeah.
I don't know.
I'd love it because I charge my phone in three places. I charge it while I sleep, and it's plugged in on my bed, but like I tend to be a tosser and a turner, so I don't keep it plugged in all night. And if I'm going to be watching YouTube or whatever, and then I have it plugged into my car, but it would be great to just be able to jump in my car and everything else already connects to wirelessly and Bluetooth. And then I have it at work. Oh man, I'd spend so much. If these transmitters cost $50 each, I'd buy $300 worth of them. Just put them everywhere.
Yeah. I charge my phone at least every other day and it's just in my office.
Least every other day.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you get so much battery life out of your device. Do you do anything with your phone? Jeez.
Apparently not. Like, yesterday I didn't do anything with my phone or my watch. But I was doing construction stuff, and I just don't wear it.
Yeah.
Which I was thinking about that. I'm like, that's the only annoying part about all this stuff. Like, if I'm doing something that requires physical labor, just like, and disconnected from everything.
Yeah.
I was even looking up watch cases. Like, the durability, get it all, whatever, and, like, there's nothing great out there.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You gotta get the stainless steel one, James, because it's got the fancy what's it called, glass? It's that sapphire. It's funny. I actually told Diana, I was like, I am so talking myself into this. Because during the conversation where I was like, you know, I really like my watch. I think I'm not ready to get a new one. I don't need the GPS. I'm super happy with this one, but I could definitely see getting an upgraded version next year. If they, you know, especially if it's faster, better battery life and stuff. And I was like, and I might go ceramic. I might go all in. And she was this is why this girl and I get along. She was like, "Like, she probably start saving now and just put like $50 away in a month." I mean, and she started. She was like, "I mean, if you think about it, like if the new device comes out in October and you put $50 away until then, well, maybe you should put $75 away, and then you can." She's looking at the prices and stuff, and I'm like, "Yeah, the fact that you didn't just be like, that's stupid, is why we get along." Because even as I said it to myself, I was like, the cheap part of me was like, that's stupid. But it's white and ceramic. Actually, somebody pointed out something interesting, that it's like you're seeing consolidation happen in the smartwatch category already. We've been talking about this a lot, and it's like it's actually reminiscent of what happened with the iPod. Early on, where there's this quick diversification of different options when it came with, iPod music options, but it also very quickly consolidated. And there were a few alternatives, but most people just went with the iPod. And it will be fascinating if that happens with the Apple Watch again, as a, you know, small peripheral business that pretty much, you know, there are other options, but there's only one real option in that category. And I think we're a long way away from seeing if that's what actually happens, and Fitbit's gonna go down fighting. So I don't want to make that prediction, but it is interesting that it at least has a similar form to the era of the iPod. But yeah, then the other. It's as 2016 has been the year of the virtual realities. There were two new cool developments this year this month that had to do with software and virtual reality. Number one, Unity, which is one of your big graphics engines developer guys, they came out with an editor for VR that they call Editor VR. And
wow,
because one of the issues is that like when you're designing games and stuff, and you're putting digital assets into your digital environment. Most of the time you're working with a computer and a mouse, and you're clicking and moving, and there's a lot of really great development tools for that. But they are looking at it and saying, hey, there's real potential here where you can sit inside the virtual environment that you're developing, and maybe we can build tools to really allow for giving developers the ability to do this in virtual reality, design sets and stuff. And especially because it's VR, if you're actually in the environment doing it, it might give you a literal different perspective on how you design it. And so there's a real advantage to being able to do this, which seemed pretty cool. One of the things that everybody kind of complains about is the fact that, there's still a huge advantage to using a keyboard and a mouse just for precision of input and the number of different things that you can click on, which brings me back around. I think there's huge potential for a peripheral there, working with the HTC and having literal like VR keyboards that exist in the VR world with you, and VR mice. I think there's a there. But it's also really expensive to be able to enroll in one of those programs. So hopefully somebody else will do it, because it seems neat, but I think there's potential. And but the other thing that happened was Google has introduced the WebVR API into Chrome for Android, which is basically, there are options already out there where you can do like simple VR style, web apps and stuff where, you know, you can be in a 3D area, not just like YouTube, but, simple 3D environments that like work with Google Cardboard. But they're pretty limited in that they just pull the rotation, your orientation data, but it doesn't work with like the full blown 6 degrees of freedom. So your three different axes of rotation and your forward, okay, backwards, up and down, which is the big advantage of VR. And so they're, mm-hmm, basically Google's like, yeah, no, we're going to do everything. So you can build full blown VR environments for websites. And
cool.
Yeah, which is really neat. It's funny because it's like, there's no device that can take advantage of it. It's like, you got the HTC and the Oculus that I guess could, but you'd have to build like specialized web browsers. They don't work with Chrome, and Chrome for like no Android for devices do 6 degrees of freedom yet. So there's this, but what I like about it is the fact that Google's like, no, that's definitely where we're going. So we're going to start building the groundwork for your different APIs right now, 'cause we can, so we're going to, which is exciting. They're showing us where they think that it's going. Virtually reality. And then,
that's pretty cool. That's exciting. It's fun to see it continue to move forward and make progress there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's neat. I know you joked like 2016 is year of VR, but it's like the year VR starts.
I know. And I was like, I don't want you to make any predictions yet, James. That's 2 weeks from now. But
okay,
it'll be really interesting to see, it'll be interesting to see where we think it goes in 2017. And
yeah, WordPress just enabled blog owners who are on WordPress.com to upload 360 degree videos.
Ooh.
And it'll work like Facebook's one, where if you got VR, it works in there. If you got a phone, you can rotate it. If you're on a desktop, you can click and drag and move around. It's slowly but surely content is following.
Yep. And in a way that never happened for 3D TVs. So stop saying it's the same thing, because you're wrong and you're dumb.
It's not the same thing at all.
But yeah, so pretty cool. Pretty exciting. I like it. And then, I'm still up. Gotcha. So do you play the
League? And then I'll go.
Do you play League of Legends? The video game?
No.
Do you,
what is that?
Do you even know what it is? I was going to say, do you even know what it is? So,
is that Star Wars?
No. So it is. It actually started as like the entire type of game started as sort of a modification to what's it called? World of Warcraft. And
okay.
And basically, what would happen is in World of Warcraft, it's real-time strategy, so you're looking down at an army that you're building. And one of the cool things that they did with that game is they had these hero units who the story really played out with them, and they had special abilities and stuff, and they would have more power within the army. And it just gave more character to the overall game experience. Well, the kind of these early mods really ran with that idea that you'd have these specialized characters and that you would fight with, and they'd have other things going on, and eventually that gave birth to League of Legends, where you have one character that you control, and in a real-time strategy bird's eye view style game, so you're looking down at the map, you're looking at your character, you're telling them where to go and what magical spells to use, and mm-hmm. You're playing in it, and most importantly, it's an online game, so you're playing against a lot of other people. The other thing that they did, and this was really clever, is that they made the game free to download.
It
is entirely supported by microtransactions in the game, which are almost all entirely
optional
skins. Yeah, they're just how you look, what sort of design you have. So the core gameplay is all free. It is one of the biggest games on Earth.
Wow.
It's especially impressive because it's kind of like, pop culture is very aware of games of like Call of Duty and stuff like that. And, you know, your different, you know, or Halo is a classic one. And League of Legends Online is bigger than those games. It is enormous. And the company makes so much money. It's crazy. But one of the reasons why it's such a big game is because the competitive, the esports version of it, the professional competitions are really, really big. They get tons of views, tons of watchers, and there's just, yeah, there's real money to be made as a player, as a sponsor, and everybody's in on it. Well, this week, there was an announcement that MLB and Disney, they have a partnership company called BAMTech, and that company wrote a deal with Riot Games, who are the makers of League of Legends, where they are now, how does this work? It's an agreement calls for BAMTech to pay a minimum $300 million through 2023 to Riot Games in return. It'll get exclusive rights to stream and monetize the company's popular multiplayer online battle arena game, or a MOAB. So basically what it works is, like, I guess it's a $300 million advance. They're going to pay him $300 million through 2023 so that they can make infrastructure improvements, and then BAMTech, this MLB Disney partnership, will be making a bunch of money and presumably and League of Legends won't make any money until they go beyond that, and that $300 million, and then they'll work out their partnership from there, I guess. But it's a pretty big deal because it's an acknowledgement that Disney obviously owns ESPN. MLB they're all about sports entertainment, and it's one of the first major deals where companies, sports entertainment companies in the traditional sense of sports, are going to an e-sport and saying, no, look, we want to bring you into the fold of a more traditional sports entertainment. Not necessarily have you featured on ESPN, but we want to bring what we know about making sports successful, and we want to bring that same sort of talent to esports. And if you're into esports and this is a big deal for you, this is a huge deal for that market.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, because it's legitimizing the idea that there's investment, there's money to be made. I mean, that shouldn't be a huge surprise given how much money they make already. But, when you're being given $750 million to as a cash advance, it's a pretty good place to be. It's fun. It's exciting to watch. I don't watch video games online. Do you at all?
No, yeah. Not at all.
Yeah, me neither.
Dude, I have a life.
I got.
I'm an adult. I'm above 25.
I know. I hate that I'm the same way, but I'm the same way. I just got no interest in it. Like, I downloaded League of Legends and never played it. I think I might even have it on my computer right now. Do I? Or is it on my... Nope, I don't. Never mind, it's on my other computer. But yeah.
Yeah.
This is the part, this is why I like it, because it's the corporate opera to me is interesting, watching these different companies, try to figure out how to make money off of it. That's the real game, James. That's the meta game. But
yeah. It's true.
Hugely popular.
Very cool. Well, congrats to League of Legends and their success so far. I want to finish this podcast talking about a cool little article, because we talk about ideas, like the awesome idea that I just had earlier about text messaging that's ephemeral, but not quite ephemeral. It's like there's a limited number of seconds to go around with everybody. And yeah, super fun type of ideas. But I'm not a technical person. I have no idea how to make that. So the question is, well, like, what do you do if you are that person? So the last article we're going to have is how a non-technical founder can launch a technical product.
All right. I like it.
Got a nice little article here. And essentially it says, well, you start with just like, have a great idea that you can't stop talking about and everyone's sick of and you're not. And I'll start there. And it's almost like, he doesn't quite come out and say it, but it's like, you have to be that on fire for it. Otherwise it's not going to happen. because, well, you have to inspire others to do the work for you, essentially.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it does start off with, like, you are more prepared than you realize. Start with what you know. For his example, he was like, I knew marketing. That's what I did. So he's like, so I started by doing research on what was out there, what my options were, and then I put together a marketing plan. When I started with that, drew concept photos, and he's like, and then you're there. I thought this was interesting too, that he goes, there's some things that when you're good at it, you do it, and then others where you're like, I'm not good at this, but this needs to happen. So his example was like for Photoshop or HTML or Xcode. He was like, the trick is pour a drink at night and learn it.
Yeah.
It's like, but during the day, do the things that you're good at and make a lot of progress, get your to-do list done, but then at night, take that opportunity to learn new skills. And he's like, yeah, it's slow and it's painful, but makes a difference.
Yeah, I believe.
And then he's like, beg and borrow for help for other stuff. And so for him, he needed a good website. He's like, so he bought a template online for $20. He's like, okay, I have a website now.
Yes.
WordPress, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's good enough.
That's our website, right? That's
exactly
the WordPress.
Well, yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with using a form, something like WordPress. That a lot of really successful web pages are based entirely around those types of technologies.
Dude, TechCrunch.
Yeah, WordPress exactly.
Website. He does say a couple other cool resources. So if you're looking for marketing design, Canva. Canva is one. A brand imagery is Unsplash. Then there's email templates, which I don't know why you need that, but it's email on acid. Anyways, the other thing he said is, for some things, like, yeah, you got to hire them out and you got to do it. And for him, it was app development. And he said it's kind of lame at the beginning. You have to choose between price and quality. He's like, so spec it out as best as you can. And it's that for Facebook, it's just start fast, break it early.
Yep.
And kind of go from there. And then he does say too, like, before you go in, make sure you talk to a lawyer or visit a legal site and get your company logo and technology and products and all that stuff protected. And, cause he says there's engineering, there's product stuff, there's marketing, and then there's design. It's like, so if you can kind of work on those, you know, focus on the area that you're good at and think through all of them and then get people in place. So they did one, it's called Corevity. It's a health understanding app. So they add nutrition, exercise, and sleep data from all of your apps to give you kind of complete look at your health. It's kind of the idea. He's like, yeah, we did it. And I know nothing. So I'm like, that's pretty cool.
That was really cool.
I like it. We talk about enough cool ideas. We're like, that's how you do it. It's like, it can be done, amazingly enough.
Yeah. I think that's the thing to me is it's like, this is, it's great if you know how to do it, and that's a really valuable skill, but it's amazing how much of this stuff is, you just kind of got to practice and give it a go and try it out, and you find that it's a lot more forgiving than it seems like it would be at first pass. And like you said, I think the idea of, you got to be the biggest cheerleader. Like, I know I've been involved in projects with people who have launched startups and who are not technical people, and they do nothing but talk about it and think about it and talk about it and think about it and meet with people about it and look for other people and fail at getting people to do it and getting all sorts of, it's incredibly difficult to do it. And there's a lot of pitfalls and stuff, but the people who succeed are the people that think about basically nothing else. They go to the bar to have fun and relax, and if they meet somebody who is at all potentially interested, they talk about their app, they show off their app, they talk about, or they, you know, they show off their deck, they They're just constantly in a state of, no, this is the future. This is where we're going. And everybody's convinced that they're the next Apple, you know. And but you have to be, because like you said, totally. if you can't build it, you got to convince other people to build it for you at incredibly cheap rates and to work harder, and you got to get more out of people than you can, because you don't have any money, you don't have any skills, there's nothing that you can bring to the table other than an idea and your enthusiasm. And his whole thing with the, you know, you gotta do what you can do. Well, that's part of it, is like you doing what you can do, you pouring all of your effort into doing the best at what you've got. You're basically saying, look, to your engineers and to your developers, you're basically saying, look, I can't do what you do, but believe that I'm going to work as hard, if not harder than you, because I believe in this project. And you're basically making them feel valued and like you're in an equal developer in it. And I just, I don't know. It's an interesting, I don't know. It's,
I think the other, like, I don't want to say it. It's like, it's two components. Number one, there are now a ton of tools to make it so that you can start super lean and easy. And then it's just the nature of the products that are being created now don't require big manufacturing plants and things like that, which are pretty awesome. But
yeah, it's cool.
It's cool, man. The future, it's here.
Yeah.
I love it. It's exciting.
It is exciting.
Well, that's the show.
Cool. It's awesome. That's what we got. To last episode of the year.
Man. Yeah, if we don't talk to you until next Sunday, which we won't, or Monday, Merry Christmas. And yeah, let's see here. And thank you so much for listening, specifically to episode 273. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes with all the links that we talked about during the show at furloughbros.com. That's episode 273. If you'd like to get those show notes sent directly to you, you can sign up on that same page pretty much anywhere. It's on the right-hand side, and we'll send the show notes right to you. It's a great summary of the tech news of the week. So even if you can't make it all the way through the show, which because you're listening to this, you did, congratulations.
Yeah, we appreciate it. You're awesome. Yeah, you're our favorite.
It's still a good summary source of everything that happened last week. And then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. And so if you would also like to contribute, we have four different levels. We have fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens, which each have their own level of rewards. And again, you can check out furloughbros.com to find out how you too can become a patron and what those rewards are. With that, I am James Furlough. My Starry Night brother, Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time.